This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Cuts to health services and income supports for people living in poverty, including those with disabilities involving mental health and illicit drug use, have contributed to a situation where police now act as de facto first responders to health-related issues on city streets. The costs of policing poverty are high and are not limited to the financial costs of spending more on approaches that do not work. A study conducted by the Vancouver Island Public Interest Research Group explores the social costs of policing poverty by documenting the experiences and perspectives of members of the street community with regards to policing in Victoria, British Columbia. The research was guided by an advisory committee and used a peer research methodology. We're joined on the phone by Mark Wilson, Research Coordinator at Vancouver Island Public Interest Research Group.
Welcome to People First Radio, Mark.
Hi there.
Mark, tell us about the peer research approach that you used in this study.
It's a really important approach when you're using community-based research methods. The idea is that you're working directly with people who are coming from a given community to do the researching, to do the questions that are being asked in an interview scenario. So there's two things that are going on there. The first is that you're using folks who are directly related to a community, so the relations of trust are already there. I mean, I think if I was just an academic going into an interview scenario, people wouldn't necessarily have the relationship with me where they could speak honestly and truthfully. So this sets up some of the context and some of the comfort zones that allow people to express themselves and answer questions in a given way. Another important part has to do with language. So I think that for me as an academic to set out a question, I may misunderstand, there may be differences in meaning in terms of the way people take up a question. The importance of using a peer interview scenario is that the people who are asking the questions understand the people that they're talking with. So again, less room for misunderstanding.
The study is called Out of Sight. Now, what is the study's title and the study itself refer to? What is it that's out of sight?
And there's a number of things there we were trying to get at, but I think there's at least four ways you can read it. Out of sight in the first place refers to the practice of social profiling. So what's going on there is you can talk about out of sight ticketing practices, and this is when the police stop someone based on their appearance and then give them a ticket for something that they would not have known about when they first stopped the person. So one of the ways this has been used in Canada is out in Toronto, where you have a number of black drivers who are being stopped and then giving ticketed tickets for not having their ID, not having their insurance, and these kinds of things. Those are out of sight. So what we're seeing here is we're seeing people who are street involved being stopped and then being ticketed for, say, public drunkenness, for loitering, and these kinds of things, things you wouldn't know about in advance, or, say, for carrying safer drug use supplies and these kinds of things. The second meaning of out of sight we were looking at is the way the city tends to be responding to poverty. And I think cities tend to use bylaws to try to drive poverty out of sight. So a lot of these ticketing practices are being used to force people off the streets or out of certain parts of town, which I think is trying to render poverty overall something we don't see. The third part we were trying to get at there is that most of these practices, in terms of ticketing and harassment, aren't reported, and there's actually no way of recording how often they happen. Because if you're not given a ticket or if you're not arrested, then there's not anything proving that you were stopped and searched, had certain things taken away, and these kinds of things. So this points to the need for important tracking mechanisms so we know what's going on the streets. And I think fourthly, we're seeing a fair amount of denial. The police board so far hasn't recognized that these things are happening, despite the fact we've heard so many stories pointing to the experiences of people on the street. And right now we're looking at talking to City Hall to have them recognize that these things are going on, to bring these practices into sight so that we can deal with them as a community.
What were some of the key findings? I know that you've listed four of them. I'm wondering if you could briefly describe them to us.
For sure. I mean, I think some of the most potent ones had to do with the way people were treated when they were stopped. So we found that people were stopped at something that appeared to be very disproportionate. So the amount of time someone is stopped in a given month or a given year seemed much higher than for the average person who's walking through the city. So that alone is fairly important and speaks to the social profiling angle. But some of the more surprising stuff, I think, was the things that were taken away from people in the process of these stops and searches. So So 50% of the people we talked to had had personal belongings seized that they were unable to recover. And this includes ID, sleeping bags, photos of family, and these kinds of things. And I think an important thing here is that you're talking about people who are living in a very unstable scenario with a range of mental health issues as well. And so you're taking the things away that actually allow people to get by. A second thing we found was that 30% of folks had their safer drug use supplies taken away. So this is the kind of thing you might be carrying around, including needles and syringes and extra bits of water that are given to you at pharmacies and these kinds of things, is that if you're stopped and you're losing your safer drug use supplies, then again, there's this really strong physical impact where you're losing the things that are required for your physical well-being.
People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and the issues related to health and wellness. Coming to you on CHOY 101.7 FM and streaming at CHOY.ca.
A study conducted by the Vancouver Island Public Interest Research Group explores the social costs of policing poverty by documenting the experiences and perspectives of members of the street community with regards to policing in Victoria, BC. Many communities have adopted an approach to crime prevention based on upholding an aesthetic of concern, regulation, and order, something referred to as a broken windows approach. The research group in Victoria spoke directly with street-involved people about their experiences and perspectives of policing practices and the criminal justice system. We're joined on the phone by Mark Wilson, research coordinator at Vancouver Island Public Interest Research Group.
Mark, this study, I just want to remind our listeners, is called Out of Sight, Policing Poverty in Victoria, British Columbia. You were sharing a couple of the findings. Now, I'm wondering if we could quickly turn to the recommendations, or at least some of them, that were attached to this study.
Our first stop is to City Hall, and we're actually going to City Hall tonight to let them know, to sort of raise awareness around what's going on the street. And our first step we'd like to see is a repeal of some of the bylaws that are actually encouraging this form of social profiling on the part of police. And there's two main ones we're looking at. The first one is a streets and traffics bylaw that allows police to take away any items that a person may have set beside them or not directly holding on the street. And what we found from what we've heard is that people are having these taken away. So, I mean, if you're standing there on the street, you put your backpack down, take a few steps away, this could be grounds to have your stuff confiscated. And it's very difficult for people to then get their things back. So that's the first one we'd like to see dealt with. The second one has to do with another streets and traffics bylaw that says something similar, but it has to do with evening time when you're sitting and kneeling or squatting on a sidewalk or median. And this is another one that encourages police to approach people who have nowhere else to go and target them for simply being in public space at a given time.
Tell us more about the notion of funding and resources that are aimed at hiding poverty, criminalizing people with mental illnesses and addictions, and the notion of reallocating those.
For sure. This is a big one, and this is a tougher one. I mean, I think when you're talking about what cities can do, repealing bylaws is a fairly straightforward one. When it comes to looking closely at the police budget and the way we're spending our resources, it becomes a much tougher move in relationship between the city council, the police board, and the solicitor general. But it's one that I think cities are increasingly having to look at. So Victoria right now, they're looking at a $1.5 million increase to the police budget here in Victoria, which is about a 3% increase over what it was before, bringing it up to, I think, roughly $43 million. And a lot of it has to do with the increased police caseload, which involves a lot of work with people who are using drugs, people who are living with mental and physical illnesses and these kinds of things living on the street. So at this point, the police are saying that 30% of their caseload is based on dealing with poverty-related issues, and they're expecting it to go up to 50% within the year. So what we're doing as a city is we're putting more and more money into the police as a way of governing poverty when this money could be used to offer the basic social services that can prevent people from going into poverty or giving people the services they need when they're living in poverty. So I think this is one simple move the city can use, and there are instances of this happening. However, I think it's one that takes a really concerted effort. So this is certainly something we're working up to in terms of asking the city to act creatively with it, with the powers that it does have.
How did this particular peer research methodology impact the participants in the study? What were some of their experiences?
Well, I think the there was a lot of positive experiences in terms of people having the capacity to tell their stories. I mean, I think you're dealing with a group that feel incredibly marginalized. And in fact, when it comes to City Hall tonight, a good number of folks who had spoken to us before do not want to be at City Hall because there's a certain danger in expressing yourself when your identity is related to it. So this did give a chance for people to speak and get their stories out there in a way that would ensure their safety. In terms of the people who were doing the interviewing, I think they were surprised by the amount they were targeted themselves. One or two of our interviewers talked about being asked to move along even in the process of doing the interview. So just being standing there looking a certain way and interviewing someone who's possibly known to police means you cannot be in this area. Let's see you move along there.
Mark Wilson, we have just a moment left in our conversation today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think the final point would be that folks can find our research at viperg.ca, and I'd encourage anyone to contact us through that website if they're interested in joining in on our campaign. We're starting at City Hall tonight, but we'll be having a number of follow-up activities that are aimed at changing the bylaws, having the police budget looked at, and ensuring that the tracking mechanisms that are needed come in terms of regulating the way policing practices are playing out in Victoria.
Thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks a lot.
Mark Wilson is the research coordinator at Vancouver Island Public Interest Research Group. The group is a nonprofit organization dedicated to research, education, advocacy, and action in the public interest. It's located in the Student Union Building at University of Victoria and is a place where students and community members connect to work together on social justice and environmental issues. You can find them online at vipirg.ca. That's vipirg.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.